Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Welcome to the Sell or Die podcast. We're your hosts, Jeffrey
and Jen Gittimer.
I'm the author of The Little Red Book of Selling and 15 other best-selling books and the creator of the Seven-Figure Sales Formula Program. I grew up in Philadelphia, sold in New York City, but was smart enough to move to Charlotte, North Carolina.
And I'm the author of Sales in the New York Minute and creator of Breakthrough Business Babe Community. Fun fact, I'm obsessed with our dogs and consider them humans. If you have a dog, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Sell or Die is for sales professionals, salespeople, sales managers, entrepreneurs, and business owners who want to sell more at full price, earn loyalty, and have an unlimited stream of referrals.
Every single episode is going to give you real-world, easy-to-implement solutions so that you can get your calls returned, your proposals read and acted on, all while creating relationships that you can take all the way to the bank.
It's time to sell or die.
So let's get into it. Jamie Beckler is here, and I'm so excited to introduce him. After a very successful career as a college basketball coach and high school athletic director, Jamie Beckler transitioned into full-time leadership training and motivational speaking in June of 2016. He received his John Maxwell Leadership Certification in March of 2016. And in addition to 5 ebooks, Beckler is a published author of the Leadership Playbook, Become Your Team's Most Valuable Leader. He's been published in the Huffington Post and is a regular guest on various radio stations and podcasts. He now travels across the country speaking to groups and teams on how to reach their full potential and become people of influence. He speaks at some of the top conferences for educators, coaches, and administrators. His work with teams have ranged from the NBA to the Big Ten to small colleges. Diehards, help me welcome Jamie Beckler.
Yay. Hey, thanks. Okay, so there's silence.
Thanks for having me.
Let's not forget to mention his new book, The Bus Trip.
I gotta update that. We gotta update that bio or something.
Yeah, The Bus Trip. What's the subtitle on that one?
The story of a team, a challenging season, and the lessons learned on a bus ride.
Whoa, like, tell us some of those lessons.
Let me give you a quick one, Jen.
Yeah.
What do you do if there's no bathroom on the bus and you gotta pee?
Pee in a cup.
Well, actually,
it depends. The correct answer is that it depends what kind of team you're coaching.
Exactly. I took a bus ride in the 60s to New Orleans. It actually might have been, it was either 59, 60, or 61, just to let you know timing wise.
Right.
No bathroom on the bus, a bunch of guys, and the bus driver wouldn't stop because he was behind. So we held guys up to the window and they peed out the window. I mean, literally 4 guys would hold one guy up and he's peeing out the window. I'm just telling you what happened.
All the ladies are squirming right now.
I coached both men and women at the college level. And the men and the women would both have probably differing opinions on what to do. But, I do know that the women did not like using the bathroom in the back of the bus, especially since most of them smelled. Not the women, but the back of the bus.
I got it. Yeah, yeah,
smelled.
Yeah.
So yeah. Our bus driver would stop at rest areas a lot.
It's an air freshener, don't they? They all, it must be because they all smell the same.
It's got a distinct smell. But we honestly, you know, I feel like I've let most people down at this point as an author, because I did not mention anything about a bathroom in the bus. So I wrote this, Ooh. I wrote a whole book and we didn't talk about a bathroom. So I guess I let our readers down.
Oh man. I mean, I could make a poop joke right there, but
please, yeah, please don't.
I'll withhold.
Jamie, as you're coaching a team and whether it's a basketball team or a sales team, and the team is losing at halftime, what do you tell them?
Well, I mean, since I'm a former college coach, I have a million cliches. But, I mean, obviously there's a reason you play four quarters, or there's a reason you play two halves. Halftime is a way to pause, reflect, and, you know, just figure out, hey, what do we got to do now? You know, I mean, you know, I think of – I'm a huge New England Patriots fan, and I know that that's probably not a good thing, but – you know, I'm a Patriots fan, and obviously, you know, when they played in the Super Bowl a few years ago, they didn't just cash it in when they were down to the Atlanta Falcons 28-3 or whatever.
Right, but they did cash it in when they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. They fucking blew it because they suck.
Well, the Eagles were a team of destiny that year. I mean, anytime you got Nick Foles leading that team to a Super Bowl, though he's not a bad quarterback, but that – absolutely. I appreciate you. I appreciate you making this podcast safe, COVID-19 safe for everybody.
Right.
With the Eagles mask.
I'm just going to, just in two short sentences, Tom Brady dropped the pass. Nick Foles caught the pass.
He's and a better wide.
He had one other two word sentence. Fuck the Patriots.
Yeah, and so for those of you who are listening and don't get it, Jeffrey had a mask on that entire time, which is why it was muffled, but it was covered in Eagles gear.
Well, I will agree, and I think I would imagine that even Giselle would agree that probably Nick Foles is a better receiver than Tom Brady.
Exactly.
But Tom Brady's a heck of a quarterback, and
no argument. They just cashed it in that day. They just went home.
Yeah, but, you know, circling back to you, I mean, as, you know, alphas or type A or people that are just competitors, people that want to win, people that want to be champions at whatever they're doing, whether it's sports, sales, just business, it doesn't matter what you are, what you're in, you aren't like that. You're not wired to just give up. You know, and even the Atlanta Falcons in that Super Bowl, they didn't give up. They just either got out-coached, they got outplayed. I mean, they didn't give up.
They played not to lose.
Well, and
they didn't play to win.
Well, and certainly we could talk at length about that too, and different philosophies and strategies and how people mentally approach things. But, you know, if you're down at halftime, you know what? So what? Suck it up, buttercup. That happens, you know, and you've got to find a way now. What can we do to find a way to do better in the second half or this third quarter? And if we're already doing great and the other team is just doing better than us, well, then we got to stay and persevere at what we're doing. Sometimes it's not that we have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We don't always have to make a 180-degree pivot. Sometimes we just have to make an adjustment, or sometimes we just got to keep doing what we're doing. I've seen this, you know, and this is – we see this example sometimes of in basketball, somebody gets really hot and they hit three or four shots in a row. Well, maybe that's not that kind of player. Maybe they're not a player. You know, I remember coaching in this kid, a seven footer would end up play a little bit in the NBA, but he thought he wanted to be a 3-point shooter, and he hit his first two three pointers of the game. And, you know, our kids are like, you know, what do? We got to guard him. And we're like, no. He's going to miss, and the best thing that can happen.
He's 0-for-10 after that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He didn't hit another shot the rest of the game, and the best thing that can happen is that he hits those first two shots. And we just persevered, and we stuck with the game plan. We stuck with what we knew would work. But you got to make sure that you have a good game plan. You know, if your game plan stinks, don't stick with it.
Yeah.
So you make it sound so easy, like just go back to the plan, you know, and I think that a big part of it is getting out of your own head.
When you're right, I make it sound easy, and it's not easy, but it is simple. A lot of stuff that I preach as a coach, I'll preach when I go speak, you know, even when it doesn't matter who I'm talking to. A lot of times I do make it sound easy, but it's not easy. It's actually very difficult. But it's very simple. Sometimes it's just a matter of just do it. And I know that that's not a great, you know, here's a 5-step program, or here are 7 steps to doing this, whatever, fill in the blank. But oftentimes the very first step is you just got to think, I'm going to do it. I want to do it bad enough that now I'm going to find the next step. But if I can't even, if I don't even want to do something bad enough, or I don't think I can do it, then I'm probably not going to be able to do it, even if I have great strategies. Because those strategies, my motivation is not going to be there. You can have a great game plan, but if you're not motivated, whether it's you or your players, if someone, if that motivation is not there, then you're not going to achieve that that potential, or reach that potential, or achieve the success you want to achieve.
I'm going to tell you the greatest thing that salespeople can learn from college athletics or professional athletics of any kind. They have to watch the films. And salespeople fail to record themselves, fail to learn from their own circumstances. But if you're in a college sport, you learn from two aspects of the film, watching the film. Number one, what are your competitors' weaknesses? And play to those. And then you look at yours and say, okay, what am I really great at and what am I really weak at? And how do I fix what's weak and make stronger what's great?
Absolutely. And you are so correct in that. We have to be willing to, as you say, watch the film. And even if we don't have a film, you know, I mean, not everybody is filming themselves or have that.
But you can hit the record button on your iPhone and throw it in your briefcase.
A great idea, an absolutely great idea. Or if you have a partner, you know, or if someone's with you, you know, they can be doing that. That's right. That's right. You got a partner, you know, your wingman, whatever it is. But even if you don't have any of that, sitting down and saying, all right, I'm going to honestly evaluate what just happened. Yeah. You know, and not enough people do that. Not enough people have self-evaluation or analysis. We're delusional. We have this vision of what we should have done. We have this vision of what we want to have looked like, but we're not that person. And I remember a couple of years ago, I loved the show Shark Tank. And a couple of years ago, they had this concept. This person was selling the skinny mirror. And this is a real thing in dressing rooms across the country. It's the skinny mirror. And you go in there, you try on clothes, and this mirror makes you look skinnier. And you like the way you look in that mirror. You like the way the clothes make you look. Well, it's not really the clothes. It's the skinny mirror. And so you end up buying the clothes and you take them home because you like the way that it looked. And it's a great marketing ploy. I'm not sure of the ethics, but, you know, regardless, it is what it is.
Wait, there's ethics in retail?
There probably should be. Not always. And the sharks probably all wish that they had thought of it first, but they essentially said to the lady, no, we're not investing in this. This isn't right. But we all go through this. We all go through life a lot of times with this skinny mirror mentality. I know how I want to look, but that's not the reality of the situation. And so we don't act accordingly sometimes because we go around with this image, and you certainly have to have a vision of what you want to look like. Mm-hmm. You have to have a vision of where you want to end up and what kind of salesperson you want to be and how a perfect sale could go or a perfect interaction could go. But you also have to be very realistic in terms of how that interaction actually went and what you can learn from that and why you didn't make that sale or why somebody didn't do or weren't inspired or motivated to do what you wanted them to do. And it's not oftentimes because they're an idiot or because you didn't have enough resources or because this or that, all these external factors. Sometimes it's us. Sometimes it's the mirror, that accurate mirror that we should be looking at, and we're not. We're looking at this skinny mirror and say, well, it wasn't my fault. And, you know, as I talk about leadership all the time, leadership is my thing. And we see this all the time from the top of the country in politics down to local politics to teachers, to coaches, to parents, whoever it is. Oftentimes we say, well, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. And it might not be your fault, but it's 100% your responsibility to find a solution, to find a way to make something work. And you know what? There might be external factors in the sale not getting done, or you didn't get enough resources, or it might've been a bad day for that person that you were interacting with. But you know what? It's 100% your responsibility to try to find a way to make that work.
I want to add one more thing to the things that teams do way better than salespeople. You have never gone in to play a game without a game plan, ever. And the salesperson goes into a sale and has no game plan. They're going to do the same way they've always done it. They have their slides. They have their pitch. They know their deal. And they haven't figured out how to alter their game plan for the customer so that the customer feels like, hey, this guy's talking to me.
Yeah, you know, I was building on that because I think that's a great point. Early on in my coaching career at the college level, you know, recruiting is the lifeblood of colleges. And you got to recruit or you're probably not going to end up being a coach very long. You're going to be doing something else. And I had this great PowerPoint presentation my first few years of coaching. Man, I answered every question a parent or a recruit could have. Like, it was on point. And the thing was, I'm wondering, they just don't seem very engaged. They're never asking me any questions. They're never, and I'm like, then finally my assistant coach is like, you're answering every question they have before they're allowed to answer. So it's a monologue. It's a lecture. It's not an interaction. Wow, they don't feel a connection. They don't feel like there's any trust. And no matter what occupation you're in, you know, what relationship you're in the sales business. You know, you're trying to sell something, your opinion, your vision, whatever it is. And people aren't going to buy unless they know I can trust you. And if, you know, you're not very likable because, well, you're just talking like the science teacher or the math teacher in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, Bueller, where you're the smartest person in the room. People aren't going to connect with that. That turns them off. And if you're the smartest person in the room and you're acting like it, now all of a sudden, you know, people aren't going to buy what you're selling because they really don't like you much.
I would ask, if I was going to recruit a kid for college and I'm talking to his parents, I would ask them, what are you hoping that your son becomes once their college playing days are over?
That's a good
because one. If I'm going to coach them, I'm going to coach them to be a great player and I'm going to coach them to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. And coaching, whether you're talking life coaching, or business coaching, sports coaching, it's really taking somebody from where they are to where they want or need to be. And, you know, I think you do that. I think you're spot on with asking the parents that. You also ask that recruit that. And you know, an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old might not be mature enough to really think that far down the road. But, you know, ask them. Ask them what's important to them. Ask them what, you know, what they want out of life. What, you know, not just what they want to do when they grow up, but ask them, you know, try to get a little bit deeper, peel back that onion a little bit. And that's the same with sales. You go in, you know, hey, boom, boom, boom. I'm going to tell you why this product is great, why you've got to buy this product. This product is awesome. These are the features that are awesome. Well, maybe it's not about telling them what the features are that are awesome. Maybe tell them, you know, the benefits and then take it one step further. Not only are you telling them the benefits, but you're asking them what they want, asking them what they need, and then relating the benefits of your product to that. What is it that you need? What's a problem that you're trying to solve? What's an issue that you're banging your head against the wall about? You know, those kind of things. That's, treat those symptoms. Talk about how you maybe can help. Maybe, you know, you talk about this, you talk about that. You know what? We've seen in this product, let me tell you a story about how this worked for Jeffrey. You know, one of our clients, Jeffrey, he was going through some of the same stuff. Let me tell you about this and see if this doesn't resonate and maybe this helps you so that, you know, you're getting a little more sleep at night or maybe you're not banging your head against the wall.
This is really good stuff. I want to switch gears and talk about your book a little bit, the leadership book, which is very intriguing to me because you talk about becoming your most valuable leader. And I'd like to hear what leader means to you and how each individual listening can become the most valuable leader on their team, whether they're in a true leadership role or not.
Yeah, I appreciate the question, Jennifer. My take on leadership is not radical, but it's slightly different than a lot of other sports coaches or people in athletics or even people, you know, in business will think about sometimes. The typical thought of leadership is that if you're in charge, if you have a position, if you're in authority, then that's a leader and everybody else isn't a leader. I take the John Maxwell approach. John Maxwell years ago came out with kind of a definition where he kind of talked about leadership is about influence. It's about one person influencing another, and that's what leadership is. And certainly we can go into more of the leadership, and certainly positional leadership is a big deal. But everybody can be a leader because everybody can influence. And so where that matters, let's take sports first. You know, let's say you have a ninth grader or a freshman or somebody that doesn't play much. You know, their best friends is the water cooler and the athletic trainer at the end of the bench because that's who they hang out with the most during a game. You know, those people can still be an influence because they can do what's right, or they can still be a leader because they can influence people to do what's right. And so what I want, when I talk to teams, it's almost a breakthrough, like ground shaking when they realize, you know what? These two freshmen room together, or these two kids are best friends. They can influence one another. Well, then this other kid is friends with this other kid on the team, who's friends with another kid on the team. And so if they're starting to influence people, they might not be the captain, they might not be an upperclassman, they might not be the leader, but they can be a leader because they can influence one another. And it might just be one or two people. And I'll talk about the wave. You know, I know you guys are big sports fans. You go to, you know, let's say you go to a Philadelphia Eagles game. Let's say in between, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles fans, you know, throwing beer bottles at people and cussing mamas out and things like that, that, you know, the city of brotherly love is known for, you know, snowballing Santa.
Right. And we mean it. We don't just do it. We mean it.
Yeah. You're very sincere in that. But let's say during that break, you see the wave going on. Everyone's doing the wave. Now, I've never been to that stadium because I fear for my life sometimes and I want to be safe. But if I were to go to that stadium, I'm going to guess that there was never a time on the Jumbotron or over the PA that they said, all right, it's time to do the wave. We're going to start in section 29.
No.
It's one yahoo.
Right.
What's that?
Someone did it simultaneously.
Well, it's one yahoo who got another yahoo, who got another drunk yahoo to do the wave. And eventually a section's doing it. And then another section. And eventually you got thousands of people doing the wave and they have no idea who started it.
Exactly.
And that's kind of how leadership can be, whether it's your company, whether it's a sports team, it's one person getting someone else to do something who gets someone else to do something. And before you know it, the whole team is doing something.
I just got an idea. You're coaching a team and the first question you ask is not who's your best player. It's who's the cheerleader of this squad?
Yeah.
Or maybe there's two cheerleaders, but those guys, whether they sit on the end of the bench or whether they sit as the best player, they're going to be the best coaches. They're going to be the encourager. They're going to be the cheerleader. They're going to be the person that celebrates everything.
Yeah, we talk about there are things that everybody can do. So whether you're the best player on the team, the most talented player on the team, or the least talented player, there are certain things that each of you can do. I mean, each of you can bring enthusiasm. You can bring energy. Each of you can be on time, you know, for Pete's sakes. Each of you can be coachable. You can take instruction. Like you said, study the film. It doesn't matter if you're the best player or the worst player, you can still study film. So there's things that all of you can do. And so if you want to be the best leader, if you want to be the best teammate, you can find these ways to contribute to the team. Maybe my role on this team right now is to support the star as much as possible. Maybe I have the key to the gym. Maybe I can get into the gym when no one else can. I have a key literally. And I can get you in there and we can lift weights, or I can rebound the ball for you and I can make you better. How many of us, when we went to college, you know, the most popular or the best leader on the floor in the dorm was the dude that had the car. You know, what can you do? You know, or, you know, worse, you know, who had the fake ID. But, you know, you look at those kind of things. How can you contribute to your team? How can you be the most valuable leader? Now, I'm not advocating being having fake IDs or doing things illegal or unethical, but I think the audience gets the point. The point is, you know, find ways to be valuable. And this works in business. This works in education. This works on your sports team because you're all trying to go for the same common goals. Now, we might have bonus structures. We might have individual accolades that we're trying to get, certainly, but we can't get those things. Like if I'm a salesperson, the majority of the time, I'm not going to hit my bonuses if billing is terrible, because most of the time I'm not getting paid until we get paid. Mm-hmm. If billing's bad or marketing's bad, or if another area in our company's bad, that's going to affect me as well. In the same way, if I'm bad, that's going to affect other people. We're going to have to do layoffs if I'm not making sales. So everybody, it's like, you know, we have expensive cars, or we love these cars that are expensive, $100,000 car or something. Well, if a $5 spark plug goes out in that car is not really very useful right now. So the stars, that $100,000 car needs that $5 spark plug. And the spark plug, you know, shoot, a $5 spark plug is not not worth anything. It's useless if it doesn't have anything to go in. You know, it's useless on its own.
Bring it into the 21st century, they need a battery that's charged.
Or they need a battery. Yes. My cell phone, you know, a cell phone or a cord. You know, you don't have that cord. You know, yeah. So that $300, $400 phone is not very useful without those $10 cords from Circle K.
Our daughter called last night and said, my phone is only at 4%.
First world problems.
I said, why didn't you charge it? She goes, oh, I don't really care. <I'm> like, what?
Yeah, it's a rough life sometimes.
When you gave the wave visual in terms of being a leader, it really stuck out for me because there's just something about the wave when you're at a game that's so easy and fun. And I don't think the person who's like throwing their arms up in the air thinks, I'm going to be a leader right now. You know, they just step up and do it and they're having a blast. And sometimes when we think about leadership, we think about, oh, it has to be so serious and so like planned and not intuitive. And I have to follow this plan and all these things. And the way when you describe a wave, it's kind of the total opposite of a business structure. Yeah.
No, that's a huge point, Jennifer. I'm going to use that. I hadn't really thought of that before. I'm going to steal that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
You know, let's take someone that's a reserve, you know, that's not playing right now or in the game. You know, we tend to sit with our hands in our, you know, our chin in our hands and we're not really focused and we're kind of woe is me. And maybe we're hoping that the player that plays our position that's out there right now, maybe they tweak their ankle or maybe they get a fit, you know, in foul trouble or maybe, you know, maybe coach yells at them for something. And so then I get to go in, you know, and that kind of attitude, that's not helpful to anybody. You know, you don't have to blow, you know, someone's candle out to make your light shine, you know, whereas if you're being enthusiastic, if you're the one that's going to provide the energy, you know, it's going to start with me. I'm going to be the, you know, enthusiasm is contagious, you know, and if you can be the one that starts that, don't wait for someone else to start the momentum. You be the one that starts the momentum and man, see, it can be fun. You know, there's a basketball team a few years ago called Monmouth. They're a Division I out there on the East Coast, I believe New Jersey. Exactly. But they got known for their bench would do all these crazy cheers and they even had names for their things. And, you know, yeah, certainly there's some attention being drawn to them, but they're also doing it as, hey, this can fire up our team and this can keep us more engaged. And I'm all for whatever will keep people engaged, whatever keep them having enthusiasm, you know, and making it fun. Leadership doesn't have to be, you know, this boring, you know, traditional position type leadership, do as I say, not as I do type stuff. You can have fun with leadership.
Have you seen the movie Stargirl?
No, I have not. Sorry. I have no idea what that movie's about.
Just mark it down.
It's a kid's movie.
Mark it down and watch it.
Is it a cartoon?
No. It's a human being movie where one kind of weird girl motivates the entire school to almost win a state championship.
Okay. Stargirl.
You would immediately relate to the fact she was the wave. She literally was the wave.
I'm writing it down. Now, is that a, can I find that on Netflix or do I have to go to something else?
I think it's a Netflix. It's a Disney Plus or something.
Oh, okay.
Our daughter searches for this shit and finds it.
Okay.
But she refers to it. She's 11. She refers to it as the best movie she's ever seen.
She made us watch it and it was very inspiring.
Very.
Well, my son is 10. And so we'll show it to him. I will watch it as a pretense. It'll be about him, but it's really for me to watch it.
Boom. Does he play Animal Crossings?
No, he doesn't. No.
Seriously?
I'm serious. We're bad parents.
I don't want to mark you down, but this podcast will be heard by others.
Well, I hope so. But no, I have not. I've not played that. I'm sorry. We will have to check that out, and that can be something else that
you have to have makes a Nintendo him... Switch. You have to have a Nintendo Switch to be able to play.
Okay. We try to shelter our son as much as possible. We haven't done a great job, but he still hasn't played Fortnite, and he's 10. I know he's way behind the curve, but.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you'd almost think he's homeschooled or something. I don't know, but we shelter him. No, I mean, he was homeschooled the last 2 months. Everybody was.
Yeah, and it worked.
Yeah. I was a great teacher, evidently, because he got promoted.
Gabrielle did her studies right there, the back end of my desk.
Nice. Yeah. So I didn't know if I was a good teacher or not, but evidently 2 months now, I'm still waiting on my check from the school district.
Yeah.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, exactly. They're having a hard enough time paying themselves.
So I want to talk about something that has been on my mind, which is how much of playing the game to win, when someone's really in it with the notion of I'm in this to win it, how much of that is strategy versus how much of that is mindset?
Wait a minute. What about ability?
Okay.
Strategy.
Skill set, strategy, and mindset.
Yeah, 33%.
Wait a minute. Isn't 33 and a third?
33. Yeah. 5 out of 4 people are bad at math.
I guess I'm one of them. Distribution?
You know, I don't think so, but that's me. And since I'm the guest today, then that becomes the expert opinion. But
oh, yeah.
I think mindset is a lot more. I am really big into, now I'm not a psychologist. I'm not trained in the brain, but I think a lot of the mental side of it, the mental toughness, the mindset, just how you approach things from your mindset, I think then dictates a lot of times those other things. Now, certainly, if you don't have any ability, then you're going to be limited. There's going to be a ceiling there. But if you have the right mindset, you might not have as much ability, but you can overcome. And we were joking earlier, but Nick Foles, obviously Nick Foles is not a slappy. Nick Foles is not a bad quarterback. He's just not as naturally gifted as some other quarterbacks in the NFL, but he won a Super Bowl. We see this all the time. You might not be Lamar Jackson. You might not be Patrick Mahomes, but you can have success. And that can go down to, even the lowest levels and not even talking sports. You can overcome some stuff if your mindset's right. So how do you handle adversity? How do you bounce back? How do you rebound from, getting a no after no after no after no?
Rebound is a very, very important word in two sports, sales and basketball.
Absolutely. And for me personally, as a high school trying to get dates, as a high school student trying to get dates, what's your mindset? Maybe that 37th girl that you ask is going to say yes to the prom. And if you stopped after 36, you're not going to go to prom, I guess. So I think the mindset is very important. I'm big into positivity. Now, not the positivity of, we've all been to a sporting event where these cheerleaders with the pom-poms, you're down 20 points with a minute to go and they're still cheering that we can win. We're the best. It's like, bull, you're not going to win. It's not that kind of positivity, but it's the positivity of, we might not win, but we're going to come out in the next game better because we're going to have learned from this. Or we're going to finish up this last minute, even though we're getting trounced, we're going to still do what we're supposed to do, even though we're getting beat. And as a coach, I'm not going to sit on the bench if I've been standing the whole game and I'm going to sit the last 3 minutes because I'm going to show everybody I'm frustrated. No, as long as we have another game, as long as we have another season, I'm going to keep coaching. I'm not going to take no for an answer all the time. I'm going to learn from stuff. I'm going to bounce back. And that's the mindset. You got to be positive to find solutions. It's not that everything's going to go right, but it's that I'm going to do what I can do and let the other stuff fall, as they may fall. And, I'm going to change and control what I can change and control. So I'm big into the mindset thing, but the ability, certainly, you got to keep working at your craft. You got to learn the objections. Now it's not, I got to learn how to read better so that I can read off this script and everybody knows that I'm reading when I'm calling somebody. It's not that, but it's actually internalize those objections, internalize the script. You got to keep getting better with your ability, certainly. So all those things are important. I forget the third part. I just kept talking so long. Ability, mindset,
strategy.
So yes, strategy. Yeah, we talked about that earlier. That's huge for a coach. As a coach, I needed to have a strategy and we would have game plans. And this is what
here's how we're gonna win today.
Absolutely. We got to do our best to put our team in the best possible position to be successful, or even I will say not only our team to be successful, but how can I make everybody on our team help those individuals be the best that they can be? How can I set them up for failure or set them up for success and not failure? And a lot of times as a coach, you know, the bad coaches, and there are some coaches that aren't as good as others. Those coaches are all going to plan, but what they may not plan for is they might not plan, how can I make everybody on our team the best that they can be? How can I put them in positions to win? You know,
Jenny, I have a couple of things that I need to talk about.
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
Best college / pro coach of all time.
Well, my favorite is John Wooden.
Okay. Well, he was never in the pros.
No, college. And I'm a huge Bill Belichick fan.
Okay. Jack Ramsey was the best coach of all time. St. Joseph's University and the Portland Trailblazers.
Yep.
He beat Julius Erving, and he had no players. He had no players.
He had a hobbled Bill Walton.
And a John Lucas that couldn't play either. Okay, but here's the deal. He had a strategy for coaching called whole, part, whole. And what he did is he explained, here's what's going to happen in the big picture. Here's how you play. And then here's what we're going to do as a team. And he fucking won ball games with players. When I went to Temple University, when he coached at St. Joseph's, he should have never won half the games that he won. But he knew how to get the best out of every single player. And he did.
Well, and that's something, you know, I love Bill Belichick. Well, Bill Belichick is the only guy in the NFL. I know you're getting a little sick in your mouth right now. I'm sorry for that. But he's the only guy in the NFL that saw what could be for a guy named Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman was a pretty decent quarterback at Kent State University, but nobody wanted him to be quarterback, but nobody had the foresight or the vision to see what he could be. And now he's been a pretty good wide receiver.
Yeah. Well, you know, he had that already because he had the Wes Welker model to go by.
Absolutely. But even during the season, you know, you'll talk to one of the guests that I had on my podcast was Mike Lombardi, a former general manager in the NFL. Well, he was with the Patriots as well. And one of the things Mike said was he talked about how, you know, if you talk to opponents of the Patriots, it's frustrating to play the Patriots because they bring a different game plan to almost every game. They might have a running back, Rex Burkman might be their running back, and he might line up 37 times as a wide receiver.
No argument. They don't with that. Care. The guy's a brain coach, even though he's a cheater. Okay. Let's talk about the best recruiters and the philosophy of recruitment in college basketball.
Yeah, well, we already touched upon it a little bit. What you said you would do as a coach is what the best recruiters are doing. The best recruiters are finding out what the parents and the recruit want. What is it that you want, and how can we help you with that? How can we help get you from where you want to be to, or from where you are now to where you want to be? John Calipari, some people hate him as a coach at Kentucky, but he's a great recruiter not because he's the X's and O's of recruiting, but because he knows people and he cares about people for the most part, and he gets into what's important to them.
I totally agree. My two best recruiters are obviously John Wooden, who got all his ball players from the playgrounds of New York City, and Bobby Knight, who never recruited a basketball player who lived more than 4 hours away from the school so that his parents could go to the games.
That works. Yeah.
Think about that. He's one of the undefeated team, Isaiah Thomas. I mean, this guy had, he's a legend, and no one knows the real secret that he wanted parents to see their kids play ball.
Yeah, because he knew it was a team. It wasn't just a team like, here are my 15 guys and the four coaches. It was a team because the parents were involved. The aunts and uncles were involved. And he also understood, too, at Indiana, that it was a whole state. You know, it's the Hoosier mentality. That whole state loved Indiana. And so they wanted Indiana boys for the most part. They wanted people that they could relate to, and that he understood that the people I bring in are also representative of every Hoosier in this state. It's just a representative of our institution, but it's the whole state. Mm-hmm. He understood that it was bigger.
All the kids are from Indiana, or for the most part.
For the most part, yeah.
Two more quick things, Jen, and then we wrap, okay? When I was in the fifth grade, I started to go to summer camp when I was in the fourth grade. It was Camp Sun Mountain at the time. I ended up at Camp Pine Forest, but Sun Mountain was the first one. One of the owners of the camp was Harry Litwack. Harry Litwack was the coach of Temple University who won 500 games in his career, but he would recruit the camper kids as well. So it was just like he would come to our house every year and recruit me to go to summer camp that year. It wasn't a basketball camp. It was a nice Jewish boys and Jewish girls camp. And when I found out he was going coming to our house, I asked all my buddies to meet on the basketball court because Harry Litwack's coming, the coach of Temple University. He's going to teach us something amazing. He's a 5'6" guy who was as round as he was tall, smoked a cigar that was so big that he had to hold it in his hand like this because he couldn't get his two fingers around it. We get out on the basketball court and he goes, "Give me that ball." Somebody bounces him the ball. He turns around under the basket and he shoots a layup. And he says, "You see that shot? 99% of all basketball games are won with that shot. Don't miss it." Now, could there be any more valuable piece of information? It took me 30 years to actually recognize what he did, but I held on to it forever.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to overcomplicate some things sometimes. And he kind of broke it down. And it's not about the three-pointer. It's not about all this fancy stuff. It's about some basics.
And tell me what you know. That's my next to the last thing. Last thing is tell me what you know about Mark Eaton.
I know he's one of the biggest individuals ever in the history of mankind. He played for the Utah Jazz, a big center. Big dude. That's about all.
You should get.
I mean, he was a good player. Yeah.
Yeah. You should get his book on the principles of team.
Okay.
He's a brilliant presenter and just an amazing guy.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Okay, gang. We have to go now. Jenny.
This has been awesome. Jamie, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, Jamie, for sharing your knowledge. Thank you for being a really good guest. Thank you for being bald. Thank you for everything.
I appreciate it. I give a shout out to God for helping me be bald.
You're cool. Yeah.
All right.
So we're wrapping it up right now, gang. Diehards, to be a big leaguer.
Where should they contact you if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, best place is Twitter at Coach Beckler. It's spelled Bechler. It's pronounced Beckler, but at Coach Beckler on Twitter, and they can find my website, books, podcasts, all that kind of fun stuff. And I even try to motivate once in a while there.
Cool.
Awesome. We will definitely add that to the show notes so they can just click it and click get it to your Twitter.
Appreciate it. Love your guys' show. And thanks for allowing me to be on it today. It was good. It was fun.
It's a pleasure. It's a total pleasure.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Sell or Die. We hope that this episode has helped you transform the way you think, given you new ideas, and provided you a new perspective on the sales and business challenges that you face every day, so you can get out there and win the customer all the way to the bank.
If you enjoyed this episode, please take a second to rate and review. Each review helps us help more people just like you make a difference in this world. Don't forget to take a screenshot, share it in your Instagram stories, and tag us at Jeffrey Gittimer and at Jen Gittimer.
See you next week.